You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
This year, we've had a lot of different science stories and a few different producers as well, chatting to AUT professors Alan Blackman and Marcus Jones. With so many cool things happening in the world of science, it was really hard to narrow them down for our best of show, but here are some of the most interesting stories of the year. So our first clip is from March, where James spoke to Alan about electric vehicles and how sustainable they really are.
I mean, we all know fossil fuels are bad. What's the problem with electric cars?
Well, that's a really good question, because it's been sort of perceived wisdom, I guess, or received wisdom, whatever you want to call it, that electric cars have to be better than fossil fuels, simply because of the fact that you're not supposedly putting truckloads of nasties into the atmosphere in the form of greenhouse gases. But it's not necessarily quite so straightforward as that. There was a study done that showed that actually, when everything is taken into account, that electric cars were, believe it or not, worse for the environment than fossil fuel cars. Now, there's a big caveat on this, and it all depends on how you are generating the electricity that you use to charge up the electric cars. Electric cars obviously don't emit greenhouse gases. However, they run on batteries. The batteries contain elements such as cobalt and lithium, and they need to be mined. So if we're going to look at the overall sort of effect on the environment, we have to take these sorts of things into account. If the electricity used to power or charge up the batteries in the electric cars was derived from coal, then you found that the electric cars were actually worse for the environment.
So ultimately, as long as the energy source for electric vehicles is sustainable, EVs are still the more eco-friendly option. Our next clip is from April, where Alan spoke to James about a new plastic with enzymes that can break down the material without releasing any microplastics.
Workers at Berkeley, that famous university in the States, have just published a paper in Nature saying that they have managed to make this new plastic that, if you put it into a compost heap or you put it into water and you heat it moderately, I think they said was the quote, it would then decompose entirely. You wouldn't have any microplastics left or anything. They incorporated this enzyme into this plastic, and what they managed to do is to get the enzymes to eat the strands of the plastic. Now, these are big, long chains of atoms. And what you want these enzymes to do is to eat them from the ends, like, you know, spaghetti, like, you know, 1001 Dalmatian, no, not 1001 Dalmatian, Lady and the Tramp, you know the one. Yeah. So trying to get it to do it like that, rather than snipping it into bits, because you get microplastics when you do that. They have managed to be able to do that very, very efficiently. And as I say, they've managed to make this plastic that will just basically disappear in water after a few days.
So this plastic has been patented and early results are looking promising. So we might just see it in supermarkets in the near future. And now this next clip is from August. Francis spoke to Marcus Jones about how looking at people's genetic code can tell us how homosexuality may have evolved.
If you talk to an evolutionary biologist, the genetics of homosexuality seems like a bit of a paradox. In theory, humans and other animals who are exclusively attracted to others of the same sex should be unlikely to produce many biological children, so that any genes that predispose people to homosexuality would rarely be passed on to future generations. Research suggests that it is still partly genetic. So in a study of data from hundreds of thousands of people, some researchers have identified genetic patterns that could be associated with homosexual behavior and show how these might also help people to find different sex mates and reproduce. In total, the team analyzed the genomes of nearly 500,000 people who had said they had had sex at least once with someone of the same sex. And they compared these genomes with those of about 360,000 people who had said they had only had heterosexual sex. they thought, okay, well, there must be something in the in these genetic patterns that help people to survive or reproduce in order for these genetic variations to be passed on and to be maintained. Researchers found that people who'd had same-sex encounters shared genetic markers with people who described themselves as risk-taking and open to new experiences. And there was a small overlap between heterosexual people who had genes linked to same-sex behavior and those whom interviewers rated as physically attractive.
Okay. So they're sort of suggesting that those, I guess, helpful genes for survival would have been selected through natural selection. That's why the genes sort of been passed
right.
on.
Right. Yes. And so they're suggesting that the traits such as charisma and sex drive could also share genes that overlap with same-sex behavior.
Fascinating stuff. And our final clip is from September, with the emissions from the agricultural sector contributing to much of New Zealand's greenhouse gas emissions. Researchers are looking into more creative ways to reduce these. Francis spoke to Alan about researchers at the University of Auckland potty training cows.
So what they are doing is a thing called Mulu training, which I think is very cute. I'm not sure what the Waikato rugby team supporters think about that name. I think they had that sort of patented first. But what they did was they potty trained, essentially, cows. So in the same way as you do with young kids, so the cows were rewarded when they piddled in the specially constructed loo. And so they got given food every time they did that. And every time they didn't do that, where they urinated where they weren't meant to, then they were given a punishment. And what they started off by doing was to put headphones on them and play a disturbing noise every time they piddled in the wrong place. And that didn't bother the cows one iota, seemingly. But what did was a three-second spray with water. And so every time they piddled in the wrong place, they get sprayed with water. And that seemed to work really well. And over several weeks, what they found was they had 16 cows in the trial group, and 11 of those became trained, toilet trained, to a level of performance comparable to that of children, and indeed better than very young children, which, when you think about it, is quite amazing. And I guess, you know, we all know that animals, certainly domestic animals, you know, can be trained, obviously, your cats, your dogs, etc., etc. Cows, I guess, I don't know, people probably haven't thought of doing this, but it seems to work. And, you know, it might seem a little bit crazy, might seem worthy of an Ig Nobel Prize down the track, possibly. But what they say is that if they capture 80% of the urine that cows emit, then you could decrease ammonia emissions by 56%. And thereby you can, you know, then decrease the N2O emissions as well. And that has to be a good thing.
That was the best of Dear Science for 2021. A massive thank you to Alan Blackman and Marcus Jones for sharing all this cool knowledge with us. And also a huge shout out to James and Francis for doing some awesome pieces on the show this year.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.